You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Television event of the summer will bring the whole family to see The Handmaid's Tale.
Bring dad and mom and the handmaid.
and not your kid because you don't have any of
those.
No. You can bring your Martha.
Add the whooshing sound. Pixar presents Magical Adventure.
Oh my God. Actually, I can picture that. And it would be adorable. With the big white hats and stuff.
Salisbury Hill, but Peter Gabriel plays in it.
Of course.
Yay.
They have little animated ovaries as characters, sidekick characters.
That's a dirty word.
What? It is?
We're not allowed to talk about it.
Well, my ovaries are aching after watching this, I'll tell you that. I have ovaries? I'm not even sure. Biology wasn't my strong point in school. We're talking about The Handmaid's Tale, which is Hulu adapting the kind of legendary novel by Canadian writer Margaret Atwood. I know a lot of people had to read it in either high school or college. I did, and it had a powerful effect on me.
I wasn't allowed to read in high school. I mean, I didn't go to school.
Keep going. What's the truth?
Because I'm a woman.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Stupid man.
I mean, a girl.
It was one of those ones a lot of you guys out there probably even read then, and I think its profound effect is even stronger now in today's world than it was then. Then it seemed kind of like, yeah, you make a lot of interesting points, but this is definitely dystopian science fiction. And now this feels like Day After Tomorrow more. In fact, it's funny. Atwood actually said, well, a lot of this, as much as all that's true, it was also a metaphor for Canada and the United States relations for
you.
Oh, really?
I read that she said it in America because no one would believe that this would happen in Canada, which is so true.
So Gilead was America and the Handmaids were Canada.
They're red and white.
Yeah, good
point. Oh, Canada.
All right, so I'm Chris.
I'm Sarah.
Scott.
Rebecca.
Introducing Rebecca.
Hi.
Hello.
Actually, Rebecca?
I feel like you recorded on one with me a long time
ago. This was, years ago, 2008 or 9 or something.
Oh, my God. And that was back in the Spill.com days.
Yeah, Spill.com.
Holy cow. Well, it was OneOfUs.net now, so fuck that other site. So this has been, to suffice it to say, dealt with great warmth and aplomb.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's like 100% on Rotten Tomatoes
right now. I believe it.
I mean, I can't imagine having anything bad to say about this if you have, you know, a rational mind.
Yeah, I can imagine people having bad things to say about this, but a certain type of person.
But to say, like, I can imagine having criticisms, but not that would get you below the 50% mark. You
know? Oh, yeah, no way. Yeah.
Yeah. The story here, as it is, like I said, dystopian near future, super near future. Like, this feels like if this crisis happened tomorrow, like, oh, people stopped giving birth on the whole, this would happen the next day. The totalitarian and Christian fundamentalist government that calls itself Gilead has taken over because of exactly that problem and with the ongoing civil war with people who are like, no, fuck that. But we don't really see much of the war, per se.
No, and they kind of drop the whole story about, like, what happened in the beginning anyway. Like, they kind of, not omit it, but they don't really get into it too much.
I wonder if they're saving that more for some flashbacks in season two. They didn't want to give everything.
Atwood has said, actually, season two will deal a lot with, she said, the missing pieces from the first one. So I assume they're going to get into that.
Atwood knows all.
Who actually is
She
indeed,
gives us the answers.
She is working very seriously, like they say, hand in hand with the showrunner for this. Bruce Miller.
And I would think so, because they basically exhausted the book, and it's all new stories. That's interesting.
So obviously they got to come up with new stuff. Elizabeth Moss plays for the second time in her career, where I've just been blown away by her. First, of course, with Mad Men, where she has one of the single most iconic feminist images ever in the last couple episodes, with her walking down the hallway with Japanese pornography under one arm and a cigarette hanging out of her mouth.
Spoilers! I'm never going to watch that show.
Playing June Osborne, although in the book she's never given a name.
That's
except for her assumed name, Offred, which means of Fred, because she has been assigned to a family to get impregnated by the husband, played by Joseph Fiennes, who's Commander Fred Waterford, while I just can't imagine anybody dealing with, like, go ahead and impregnate her, honey. Yvonne Cervasi has to, as the wife, sit with the handmaid's head between her legs, like, resting on the lap while the husband has intercourse with her. You're like,
they're so
creepy.
We'll talk about
and
that.
And weirdly, as we find out, it was her idea in the first place.
Yeah.
And of course, Elizabeth Moss, as we learn through flashbacks, does not want to be there, obviously. And there's a whole group of handmaids. We don't get to know very many of them, just a few. And some have kind of gone way off the deep end, as you might expect. And others are secretly plotting. And Elizabeth Moss' character is just so frightened she doesn't know what to do, but she does know she wants to reconnect with her daughter, who's out there somewhere. And as we discover later, possibly her husband as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good-looking guy.
He is.
Nice little appearances throughout this from a number of actors. Everybody I saw in this. Alexis Bledel has a small role in there. And Anne Dowd as Aunt Lydia, who is like...
Oh, she's so good.
Yeah, everything she's in, she's great. She's like the matronly head of the handmaids when they first come in. And she's a kind of a nightmare. Max Minghella plays Nick, who's the commander's driver and part of the Eye, a spy network.
And he's so cute.
Who's also kind of a love interest. I don't know. I mean, like, that's basically the storyline in the most loosest possible terms. I'm hoping that most of you all have seen this. That was unnecessary. You've already actually watched all of this, so we can get quickly into the spoiler section. But like, in a nutshell, what do you guys kind of think about this?
Oh, I think it was an absolute nightmare as a possibility of a future. There's so much about this that, like... I was screaming, I was crying, I was cheering. It's terrifying, and I feel like it's a necessary watch for so many people, especially if you're one of those like, well, what's so wrong about XYZ that we shouldn't, you know, progress feminism? This is what can happen. Like, Margaret Atwood said that everything that she put in there has happened at some point in human history. And in some cases, is still happening today in terms of how society is run in Gilead and how women are treated. Mm-hmm. So it's not, like you said, when this came out, like a, you know, possible dystopian future. It's already happened. It's still happening, and it's going to happen again.
It feels like a fingernail's breadth away from happening here.
Yes. Yeah. It's just that some of these things have happened in the United States. It's just not in its whole.
Sure. But why are you trying to oppress men, Sarah?
Because I hate you dicks. Too many dick pics.
That part I agree with.
Yeah.
Scott, what's your overall opinion?
Well, you know, I really liked it, you know, from a pure, like, adaptation. It was an amazing adaptation because what it did was it took things that from the book and got rid of them or just moved on or expounded on them in a way that was really interesting because there were things they clearly had to, like, we'll talk about spoilers. They had to end it where she clearly is not getting taken away by the Eye. She's getting taken away by the resistance. And
well, seems I'm like, assuming, yeah, people called it ambiguous, but I was kind of like, yeah, that's not ambiguous.
He said, don't worry about it. Just go with them.
Well, not only that, she talked about...
He assumed that he's on her side.
And in the beginning, they talk about her being dragged into the van, but she goes in face first.
Yeah.
And she's proud to go in, so I think she knows where some idea where she's going. So, you know, bringing with the husband, that's really interesting, and, you know, kind of bringing that back, and then, the of Glenn, that was interesting, and just... I really liked it. It is important. It's very much like where we are today. It's definitely, you can't say an exaggeration. I mean, it's an exaggeration because there are women walking on the streets wearing these habits, and it's a little extreme. But at the same time, is it really? Because the flashbacks are especially jarring because it looks like now, and this isn't that far away. So the dialogue is really pointed. It's really interesting. It doesn't really come off. Is it anti-Christian? I don't know. I don't think so necessarily. I don't think it's against one religion particularly. I think it's more about the people who are behind it rather than the religion itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it really very intelligently does that too, because it could be like, oh yeah, Christians are all bad, but I don't think it's what it's doing. I think it's like, because even shows like Fred is a complete hypocrite at the end, and you know, they're all hypocrites really.
Yeah, what a shocker mm-hmm. that men can be hypocrites when it comes to when their penises are involved.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, you made me do this. Like, really? Come on, man. Like, you led me to temptation, and now I'm doing this.
Oh, that was so disgusting.
I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's critical of people who use religion to, you know,
use it as an argument.
Create a society that they view as ideal, and you can very easily take the Bible, the Quran, any of these religious texts and be like, no, see, it says here that a woman belongs to a man in some form or another, and a woman's purpose is to give birth, but you could probably take any book and make it say that.
For sure.
In the context of time past, the Constitution is incredibly ambiguous, much less the Bible, which is wildly ambiguous.
Caesar's every man.
The idea of trying to take passages from it and say, well, because it's said here, it should be part of law that everyone has to follow is absurd, of course. Mm-hmm. But like, this is about what if we were in a world where that just wasn't what happened. The people who like to pick and choose from Leviticus as they want were able to pick exactly what they wanted to be the rule of law because of panic, mm-hmm. which is, you know, you know anybody who's paranoid around Muslims? Well, welcome to a parallel.
I have a couple of gripes we'll let them go on.
Yeah, Rebecca, what do you think?
Oh, so I actually, when I first saw the first episode...
Get up a little closer to the mic.
Oh, sorry. When I saw the first episode, I wasn't sure if I liked it or not, because I'd been a big fan of the book, and the book is very, very internal, and the book is very, very quiet. The main character is very passive. She's not a revolutionary. She never becomes a revolutionary. She observes the society as it's passing. There's a point where she kind of gets involved in the resistance a little bit, almost accidentally, but she never pursues any major action. So I remember like hearing her name and hearing her curse just affected me when I first, when I saw the first episode. So it's a very different tone, I think, than the original book. Original book is a lot about 80s feminism and some of the conflicts that were happening with 80s feminism and, anti-porn feminism and, ideals about women and men being inherently different, and that didn't come across as much in the show. But I think I do like how it was. I do like how we got a lot more of the characters, a lot more of the backstory of the characters. You got a lot more development. And at the end, I was really appreciating Offred as a revolutionary figure and the TV show as the Handmaids as a total group being almost an activist group or becoming an activist group. Because I feel like by the last scene of the last episode, you got the sense that all the Handmaids were together. All the Handmaids were, like she said, they were all army together.
Well, great line, they made the mistake of giving us a uniform, which makes us an army. I was like, oh, didn't your heart swell a little bit?
Girl army.
Yeah. So it's a different tone, but I really liked it.
It was hysterical to me at South by Southwest when they were promoting this before anybody knew what it was.
Oh.
I had like giant groups of women dressed like the Handmaids walking through and watching men start to freak out because they didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. So at first I was just like, yeah, it's a promotion of that show. But after a while, I was like, don't you know? There's a huge feminist protest going on right now. They're a very angry, violent group. And he's like, what? And you'd be like, what? It's like, no, I'm just kidding, dumbass. It's that show, The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, because there have been a lot of angry groups of women.
Well, there have been. History. They just don't tend to pick up weapons as much. Yeah, like, often I'm kind of like, you know what? If you did, we'd kind of have it coming at this point. Suddenly, it turns out there's a whole group that is like, hey, we've got our AK-47s. And you're like, I give up.
Nonviolent revolution.
Yeah. That actually reminded me that the protest scene was one of the scenes in the show that I really, really appreciated, because I've been to protests where, like, all of a sudden somebody had a gun, or all of a sudden, like, things are going well, and then all of a sudden it looks like the mood just kind of changes. And that scene really, really, really stick to me. And that
It was definitely a direct statement about passive resistance, for sure, mm-hmm. Which was fascinating the way it played out, but also disturbing happening in the last episode as it did, because even if our main character, Offred, gets away, what the fuck is going to happen to everybody else in that mm-hmm. scenario? You're afraid for all those characters. At the same time, supportive that they did that.
Yeah, there's no one who gets out unscathed. Like, I'm going to only say this once, but even the men at the top are being oppressed. I mean, just look at of Warren, was it? Or sorry, Warren. The okay, the Janine hand. Was
Glenn.
The one who tried.
No, no, not Glenn. Janine.
Warren.
Yeah.
Warren, right?
Warren.
So
yeah, Warren.
That guy who was, you know, having pleasurable sex with Janine got put on trial, and his wife was like, give him the strongest punishment ever. So that is like everybody is getting oppressed in some kind of way.
Yeah, I couldn't really cry too hard for that guy.
Yeah, I couldn't. But I mean, there's obviously different levels. And then you go down to all the wives of these guys. And like Yvonne, however you say her name.
Skahovsky.
I could be wrong. So, so good at displaying this subtle discomfort in her face with every little thing. And you learn later on that it was her own doing.
Yeah.
Because, like, at first it was like, okay, she's going to be just a total bitch. Sorry to say that word. But you feel sympathy for her and you hate her at the same time. But, like, there is that... Fuck, what did I do?
Yeah.
This is all my fault.
She's the oppressed and the oppressor. Yeah. And that's like, again, that's like another feminist ideal that in a sexist society, everyone suffers. Like when there's inequality, even if you're someone on the top, like you have to experience the inequality and it affects you on soul deep levels.
So. Back on when I first discovered that actress on the show, Chuck, she was the secret weapon on that show. Where you're like at first like, oh, well, she's like the sexy love interest or whatever. But after a while, you're like, wow, she's really good.
Yeah. I first saw her on season whatever of Dexter, which was not a good season, but she was really good.
Yeah.
And she is something different.
This is her move up from TV actor to probably going to start seeing her appear in films more, I suspect.
Well, they made the character a lot more fleshed out, and it's been a while since I've read the book, but I remember Serena Joy being kind of, not bland, but just not as... She really wants to have a child. She seems to really want the baby on the show, and she seems really motivated by that. You almost feel like you feel sorry for her, but you hate her, and it seems a lot more... She seems more driven. In the book, she's kind of like, yeah, baby's a status symbol, no big deal. At least that's how I read it. I don't know.
I think even in the show, it's like, baby is my... To raise this baby is now my only purpose. Mm-hmm. Now that I can't read, because what was she like, a lawyer before? I assume
I think she was like a speaker. She's
some public relations.
Yeah. So she was an intellectual, and now she has what she can knit all day.
Right. Yeah.
That's all she can do. But give her a purpose. Give me this purpose. Give me a baby to raise, so that not only I can keep up with the Joneses, but that I can fucking occupy my mind.
She's go ahead.
Oh, no, Serena Joy. I feel like she was the one character who, like, and she's very, very unhappy, but I think this is almost exactly the society that she wanted. Like, she wanted to not work. She wanted to be at home. She wanted it to be a very biblically-based society. She wanted a society where her only expectation was to have a kid. And now she lives in that society, and she can't have a kid. But she did. Mm-hmm. She orchestrated the entire thing. And in the book, you get the sense that she was involved in the conservative movement, and she was a big speaker for this kind of feminism, the kind of, like, stay-at-home and, like, it's called traditional feminism. But, like, in the show, she's the one who advocated. She had the best-selling book advocating traditional feminism, and now here it is.
Yeah, you made your bed, now you're sleeping in it.
Right,
and
exactly.
Maybe... Line where she's, you know, we talk about the law. She's like, I know the law, I wrote it. And she's like, and she seems, she almost, because she regrets it. She's like, oh, shit.
And I suspect...
And I can't read it now,
I suspect the arc we're going to see from her going on in the show, which we are getting more seasons, of course, because this was a big hit for Hulu, is her starting to crumble as she starts to realize what she's done. That, like, maybe there really is not anything there. Maybe this isn't better for anyone. And then what do you do when you're the one who helped create this in the first place?
I almost want to say she's going to double down.
You think? I think she might double down first. But
I don't even think she would go the other way. I think she would, like you're saying, I think she would double down. I think she would just completely embrace it, because she's not the type, she's stubborn.
To ever admit she's wrong. Yeah. I mean, that sequence when Offred is just screaming, like, invective at her from the back of the car.
It's just so
hard. And she's
so
just like,
cold.
She's just like, her only reaction is like, will you pipe down? You're annoying me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she's a cold fish, to be sure.
Yeah, and she's bought in so much, I think, that she can't go back at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, because she's just invested so much in this idea in the society and this view of herself.
What's going to happen if, as it looks like it might, Joseph Fiennes' character might be first to go back on this rather than her, because he's like, but I want to be able to not be prosecuted and have my hands cut off
yeah.
if I have sex with other women.
I'm kind of wondering if it's going to be more of like, we're going to think he's like on the fence, but in the end, they're going to be like, well, do you want to go back to a society where you have to compete with women? No. Yeah. No.
I also feel like he didn't entirely earn his place in the structure where he is. Like, I think he has a lot of power basically because his wife mm-hmm. motivated him and came up with all the ideas, and she kind of used him as a mouthpiece.
Yep.
And since, you know, if that partnership breaks down and he's no longer her mouthpiece, he's not going to be as valuable.
Yeah.
Especially because he doesn't buy it. Like, you can tell that Serena Joy, she's very religious, and she buys at least this view of gender to some degree.
He clearly doesn't, because he basically treats everyone like the previous handmaid treats him like a whore. He's basically, and he goes to the Jezebel. He's just completely living in sin, etc. So he doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's a show. For him, it's a prop. For her, it's her lifestyle, and he's just enjoying the
perks
for.
Of
perks.
It.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, she calls him out on the bullshit.
Exactly. And one thing I have to say this just needs to get out there. Yep. He looks too much like Adam Levine. It was freaking me out the whole time. I mean, it's really hard to take him serious. I'm like, are you going to turn your chair around and hit the button? What's going on?
All right. One other thing about him. Like, did it sound like he kind of had like a Spanish accent in this? Like, I know he's British.
Yeah.
But like, his American accent was kind of Spanish. I was like, oh, supposed to be Spanish? But oh no, it's Joseph Fiennes. Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson? Oh, yeah. He played Michael Jackson. That ill...
It never happened.
It never got aired.
It never happened.
Yeah. I just think of him as Voldemort's brother. I suspect when we get a new season, it's probably going to start with the definitely underexplored, because she's a great character of Moira, played by Samira Wiley.
Moira.
Her best friend... Sorry. I never can say that right. I don't
Moira.
Know what's wrong with
it's
me.
Irish.
Who has escaped in the end to Ontario and has reconnected...
has... ever been so happy to arrive in Ontario.
Ever. She's reconnected with Offred's husband, like, who we have discovered has indeed made it, and it's just a deeply emotional moment watching the two of them who are very close anyway, reconnecting. I suspect the first episode may not even have Offred in it.
Mm-hmm.
We may give us one of those big, like, yeah, you're going to have to wait while we explore this. But to be fair, she's like so great. She's such a big unspoken part of this whole story. We mainly just see her in flashbacks, that it would be nice to spend some more time with her and Fred's husband and get to know Ontario and what's going on there.
To know Ontario.
We almost have to for the show to go on. I mean, obviously there has to be a new storyline with new characters being set up in Ontario to like continue it.
I wonder if what's going to happen in Ontario is going to be, or in Canada, is going to be the political discussion about do we intervene or not? Because I can imagine that character being a big part of it. Because handmaids still seem like they're almost an urban legend at this point, or something. They don't quite know exactly what's going on in Gilead. And I think that she might be an advocate for action in Gilead from the Canadian government.
Yeah.
That could be an interesting thing.
And that, like, that episode where they had the Mexican ambassador in Gilead was so fucking hard to watch, because the whole time you're like, Offred, say something! And then she finally says something, and the ambassador's like, no, we know it's bad.
Yeah.
And but there's nothing babies. We can do.
But you know, as it is in the world today, America is with way too many issues. Yeah, but we have our problem, so we don't really care that that's a problem for you, because we need to solve ours first.
Yeah. So anybody who says, like, why don't the people getting oppressed say something? This is a great example of they do. It's the people in power who don't do anything or can't do anything about it, even if they want to.
Yeah, that's very true. I think also there'll be a big problem in Canada here, because everyone will go, oh my God, the beer is terrible here. We need to go back to America.
I don't want Labatt Blue.
Oh, it's so gross. This barely qualifies as beer. What's wrong with it? It smells like, tastes like a skunk. That probably won't happen, to be fair.
It will.
Although it would be nice to see just one person sip when I'm making ugly face.
Well, Moira will be like, I haven't had any alcoholic drinks in forever. And she'll drink the beer and she'll be like, oh.
Well, actually, she probably
has. Oh, that's right. She was in Jezebel.
She was in Jezebel. She even said, she's like, I've been staying high and drunk this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you? To be like, they made me forced to be a prostitute, so I don't really have a lot of choice. Yep. So I'm just going to shoot heroin.
And I don't remember the book very well, but the amount of time that's passed is very weird to me, because when you see her daughter, especially, I found that really jarring, because in the beginning of the show, when you see the daughter, she's not that old or not that young, and maybe
three.
When she sees her at the very end, she's what, 4.5, 5? So only a year or so has passed? Or
no, I think she was a little bit older. Maybe it's been like 2 or 3 years. Because it's mentioned in the first episode, June was at another house before. Right. So there's some amount of time, plus all the training.
But there's also some kids. There's like a whole flood of children who've been literally been born to handmaids, and they're 2, 3. They're actually a pretty decent size.
We don't know what point June was caught takes place inside of the structuring of like that That's new true. Society. Yeah. They did say there's a civil war going on, so I'm assuming not all of the country has been taken over by this group.
Yeah. Do we know what city Gilead used to be? Boston. Was it Boston? Because at first I thought I saw like Chicago stuff. Around? It's Boston?
They've been clear. I think a couple of times they call it being Boston. I think I'm in Boston.
I know it's in the Northeast.
Well, because they weren't going to film it in California. Oppression. But it's beautiful outside.
So, at least
like,
it's so hot in the stress.
Look at the palm trees. Also, women need to do what we say.
Yeah.
Definitely Boston made for a better environment there. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they actually filmed it in Canada.
They shot in Ontario. There you go.
So that's why they name check Ontario. They're like, Ontario, go Ontario.
It does look like Ontario. Very gray.
So I think in terms of awards this year, there's no question that both of the Emmy and the Golden Globes, this is going to get the appropriate best miniseries or best dramatic presentation.
Elizabeth Moss.
At least nominated.
Something. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Elizabeth Moss will get nominated for best actress. I suspect Yvonne Strahovski will get nominated for best supporting actress, even though she's there almost as much as Elizabeth Moss is here. Like, but you know how those things go. You nominate what you think you can win.
She's not the titular handmaid.
Yeah, true. She is not. You're still my favorite word. I overuse titular, perhaps. It has been pointed out. All right. So let's go around and give us our final thoughts and ratings on this.
Can we talk a little bit about...
Oh, sure.
A couple things.
Oh, yeah.
One, the race aspect in this.
Oh, right. Yes, because I forgot about that, because Scott brought that up.
Yeah. So, of course, a lot of the leadership in Gilead is white, and the handmaids are kind of mixed. It's probably mostly white, but we see some Hispanic and black handmaids. And, of course, Moira is black and gay, or a gender traitor. As they call that, and that
can
is
I can real I get
life.
A clean cut of you just saying her name real quick,
Moira.
There, whenever I have to say it from now on.
Can you please? People be like, "What the fuck is going on?" And I think that was a conscious decision of the casting director because what's kind of happening now is the loudest voices complaining about feminism are white men generally. And also the whole, this is a post-racial America, blah, blah, blah. And we see these handmaids who are women of color are going to, give birth to children of mixed race or give birth to mixed race children. And I think that's kind of interesting that, like, they expect their next generation to be mixed race. What do you guys think about that? I don't know. That wasn't like a question, but like, I think that was kind of, I don't know if that's like a narrative choice or like.
Well, like I was saying before, I think in the book, it's clearly spelled they're racist, and that's kind of very clear. But it's never really called out. And even though Margaret Atwood in the interview says she basically based what happens to the handmaids on slavery, never actually said they reference slavery as a starting point. Hey, we did this before. Let's do it again. They don't ever call it out specifically, which is a little peculiar. So I don't know if it was deliberate, but there were some mixed race, and it was good. The Marthas were a lot of persons of color. And that was nice, but I feel like it was still pretty lily white for the most part, and I don't know if that was a conscious decision or not. It may just be that's just what they do.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned before the taping about the last scene where they're walking down the street and to March of the Handmaids and they're playing Nina Simone, and there's maybe one black handmaid in the whole scene in the very back, but it's mostly white women marching to the song, and I'm like, if it's intentional, that's some really interesting stuff. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think so, but I also don't think it's malicious either. I just think it's so subconscious that even though it's like, yes, feminism, but I think it's still very, has a very white front to it.
Might have to do with the lack of black people in Ontario to work as actors.
That's
I don't
true.
Know.
Yeah.
And my friend Martin also, Corey always like, black people do not like cold weather.
But they're also, we don't see any Asian handmaids or Asian people, really. Like,
that's true.
I'm trying to think of a single scene that might have had any. It is very white, and I don't know if that's just, you know, Hollywood, or if it was a conscious decision.
It's interesting either way. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I think it would have been interesting to see June as a woman of color, and then it would have been, like, overtly, this is a racial issue as well as a feminist issue.
Yeah. I'm wondering about, because, so the conservative movement in the States, obviously, and the conservative religious movement, obviously, still racist.
Yeah.
But there's been movements there to incorporate more, at least to have, like, a lot more token black people or token Hispanic people, and that's kind of what The Handmaids are appearing like to me. It's like, we're okay with you being a minority as long as you agree with us. It's when you don't agree with us, then we don't like you being a minority. But, like, that mix of that increased acceptability of people being different races. So that's kind of with the handmaids who are different races. That's kind of like, yeah. And they're okay with having mixed race kids.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I mean, I definitely saw some degree of the mixed race kids in there as well.
Yeah.
But I also, like, my thoughts were, it seems to me if the 1% are those who took over, which they would be, right, white, rich Christian guys, on the whole, they probably did not want black babies because most of them are racist. So it'd be like, well, no, there wouldn't be many black handmaids because they just want the white ones.
Yeah. Well, they just want the babies, though. Like, there are so few babies that you just want a baby. It doesn't matter.
Some degree of just like, okay, so few women have working wombs at this point that because of the toxic pollution that the same 1%ers created.
I just imagine, like, when you said working womb, I, like, imagined a womb with a heart hat on, like, carrying a lunch pail.
Fred Flintstone sliding down a fallopian tube.
Well, I mean, you can even, like, going back to the, or back in the race thing, but even with, like, Offglen, the original Offglen Emily, like, she's obviously gay, she obviously was in the revolution, like, she obviously had all these strikes against her, but they kept her alive as long as they could, like, to their detriment, because she could have kids. Like, I think it's just the importance of kids there, the importance of being able to have a baby, despite any other factors.
Did she die on the show? I guess I must have, like, spaced out while it happened.
She didn't die. She hasn't died yet.
And they don't show it.
Yeah, we don't know. I think it was kind of presumed, but enough where
it's implied that she commits suicide or something like that. But in the show,
I think it's enough where if they absolutely had to, they could find a way to bring her back, but I think it's pretty presumed she's gone. Plus, she's Alexis Bledel, who's probably cost more, so they're
going to
get her out of here. She has to go do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the stuff, as disturbing as the show is, and it's just like every episode, there's at least something that punches you so freaking hard in the stomach. You're like, oh my God. It's shocking the stuff they didn't decide to include from the book as well. Some of which had to do with that alternate world where they were racists as well. There's the whole thing of like, oh, we're sending all the Jews back to Israel. And then they would get out in the ocean and just dump them all in the ocean. Yeah.
Are we going on a cruise, Chris?
Yes, it's going to be
fun. I love cruises.
Pixar presents The Handmaid's Tale, The Israelites, a direct-to-DVD sequel.
You know what? The shrimp was so bad, I'm glad we're getting dumped in the ocean.
But yeah, I think we do need to go to final thoughts on this one here. Right, so let's start with Rebecca. And once again, thank you for joining us. It's been too long.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting show. My favorite characters are Serena Joy. I really kind of expanded on her. I know we mentioned Aunt Lydia before. I really like what they're doing with Aunt Lydia. Like, I think the women who are in the show who are kind of on the side of the dominant society are the most interesting ones. So I'm looking forward to getting more from them later on in the series. I'm looking forward to the expansion of the universe. Like, again, we stopped where the book stopped. So, and in the book, we know that eventually the, spoiler alert, the society ends, but we hundreds a year in the future it has ended. So I'm kind of interested to see exactly where we're going with that and how that happens.
Especially considering the whole, like, in the book has the afterthoughts where it's like, well, this is all we found.
Yeah.
So we don't really know what happened to her after this, but this was an artifact, this whole story of, like, this period of time. Mm-hmm. Now we've got to go past that. So how deep does she want to go into that? Do you think that Elizabeth Moss' character will live to the end of the show?
Yeah. I'm curious about it also being a revolution, because the book is not about a revolution at all, and the show seems like it's very much about people overcoming the society. So I think that's a big change, and I think I would be surprised if she doesn't live. I know it's a dark show, but just the way that they're telling the story, I don't see how it ends in a way that isn't hopeful.
Cool. Scott?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with the statement about the female characters in charge. I think they're really interesting because they're really much more fleshed out in the book, and I really am interested to see what they do with them, like how they react. Whereas like Serena Joy seems to be kind of going darker, and Lydia seems to be kind of, I don't want to say getting lighter, but mm-hmm. you see her regret and her empathy is coming more and more as the show goes on. It's really interesting. It's really neat to see a show that's so insanely timely. Like, it's so important. Like, everyone needs to watch it. It really is. I don't really say you have to watch the show. No, people really need to watch this because you can sit there and you dismiss it. Oh, it's just TV. It's just science fiction. It's an analogy. But there's so many things that are just, we're not that far from, not that entirely. I mean, that would take a lot of things to happen, but we're still not that far from even the beginning of that. So it's really interesting to see that we're approaching even the cusp of that is terrifying.
It makes the arguments for modern day sexism the same way Get Out makes its arguments yes. against racism.
Very, you know? It's yeah, very similar. And it's, and it's really, you know, then just forget the social aspect of it. It's just so amazingly well done. The crafting is amazing. The production is, it's incredible. This is a TV show that we're just watching on Hulu. I mean, who thought that would be the case? And that's just so incredible. And it's changed. Like, I really like the, and I'm going to geek out for a second. I like the changing format from being regular TV, not binge watching, but a weekly show that you watch online is really cool. Like, it's a really neat way to dispense entertainment. You're not like being forced to watch it all at once, but you're not like, you're not bound to your television set to watch it at a certain time. You watch it on a day. That's really cool. So that's, it's changing not only talking about important issues, but how we watch TV. I think it's really, really neat too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I actually wonder how this would be to binge watch it. Like, maybe I'll wait like 6 months and then binge the whole thing.
I just don't
but
think
I think it might
think
be too much.
So much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so intense.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read the novel because I don't know how to read.
I'll teach you. We'll make a whole documentary about it.
Sure. Oh, wait, I'm not Helen Keller.
No. You can actually see and hear and everything.
Okay. But, so, like, I didn't know what was going to... I didn't even know really what this was about, other than, like, there's a society where women are forced to have babies. And that is my absolute nightmare. There is a scene, it's maybe the third episode or something like that, where Janine is giving birth, and they're having, like, a birthing ceremony, and I wanted to vomit. I was like, oh, it probably stinks in there. Right. There's probably fluids everywhere.
You get so pissed off at the wife who's doing the breathing. The wife's like, fucking stop that. You're not having a kid.
Like, all in unison. Uh-huh. It's just, it's so creepy.
It's really
creepy.
Uh-huh.
And
as Robin Williams said, because you have this illusion that you're sharing the birth experience. Breathe, honey.
And just like everything with the LGBT people being called gender traitors and forcing them to, you know, well, in the case of all the LGBT men, they're killed, no questions asked. And then the women, if they're fertile, are forced to do things that they absolutely do not want to do. And, you know, it's so horrifying. And it is also so beautiful. I think just the colors are amazing. The there's like a greenish, bluish, grayish filter, and then the handmaids are bright blood red with their stark white, perfectly starched bonnets, and it's really something to look at. Even just as a photography standpoint, I think if you are into science fiction, if you're into politics, if you're into good acting and good looking media, this is so worth it to watch. Don't expect, you know, happy moments. Don't expect, like, you know,
it gives you a few moments to breathe.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. But it's, I mean, I would say this is my favorite series this year.
Yeah, I definitely think this is one of the best things that's been produced on TV this year. I mean, I'm between...
It's not TV. It's Hulu.
I'm between this and Legion for my favorite shows this year, although this is definitely more important mm-hmm. than Legion is. Legion was also, like, just a massive work of art that I was
yeah.
Oh, man. And then Twin Peaks isn't over yet, so Scott and I reviewing it every other week. Oh, yeah.
Are you tired of it yet?
No, I love it so much. If they could inject it directly into my veins and I could just walk around with a Twin Peaks IV, that's, I would do it.
David Lynch will make that happen.
He probably will. That's a selling point for me.
No. Chris, I brought you an IV.
That was a good David Lynch.
That's good. Yeah, Agent Cole. Yeah, and listen to our Twin Peaks reviews on the site. Yeah, this is wonderful. Everybody should, in fact, see this. I know there's going to be those people who'll see it to hate watch it, and I feel sorry for them. I'm just like,
really?
Why are you?
I feel like if you watch it to hate watch it, you're going to actually love it.
You would hope so.
You're going to change your mind.
I would hope so.
Meninists should all watch this.
I always keep thinking you're thinking about the, what's the religious group that sounds like
Mennonites?
Mennonites. I'm like, that confuses me.
Mennonites watch this too because
when they went on a marketing tour for this, it was interesting. They did not promote it as a feminist show. They're actually very pointedly not talking about being feminist. Mm-hmm. They walked it back, and it was really interesting to see them do that. And,
yeah,
and
I wish
also
they had.
Elizabeth Moss is a Scientologist, so that's mm-hmm. really interesting. That's so like, this is very much against what she is. So I'm like, man, is this her like trying to break out?
This is her like big like cry for help.
It's funny.
Let's save her.
Such a big
come on. Let's go to Canada.
Of all her performances, but like my wife was telling me, yeah. Every time I see an interview with her, you're like, I don't think she's real bright. Like you get this feeling like she's just not that smart a person. She's just kind of goofy and like not in a fun way. And you're like, she's like, how can that be the same actress who's like one of the best
maybe
actresses
she's nervous
working right
in
now?
Interviews.
Yeah, it might be that. Yeah. Some people are that way. Like, so but you know, you look at it'd be like Patrick Stewart, who's always playing these quietly dignified characters, and then you put him on camera and he's like,
and we're like, oh, I want to pet his head. Have you seen that video of his dog licking his head while he's in a pool?
Yes.
And I was like, we're all that dog.
We are. We are Patrick Stewart's head-licking dog.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years. But there's a side to them many of you have never heard. The subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Club, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to oneofus.net and don't forget your towel.